When you go to the grocery store, do you reach for the milk cartons in the back in hopes of finding the one with the latest expiration date? The words sell by, best by, use by, product dates are almost on all packaged foods, but what do they mean exactly, and why is it that you can find yourself pouring milk that's gone sour long before it was supposed to? Well, to answer those questions on today's edition of our weekly series, Please Explain, we have asked two experts, Todd Marks, a senior editor at Consumer Reports, and Dr. Susan Sumner, professor and head of the Department of Food Science and Technology at Virginia Tech. I'm very pleased to welcome you both to the Leonard Lopate Show.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Todd, an article on sell-by dates in your magazine begins with this question, and I'm paraphrasing. It's breakfast time, and you're craving a cheese omelet. Your carton of eggs says expires February 8th. The cheddar says used by February 10th. The milk says sell by February 12th. It is February 15th. Can you safely scramble an omelet? Is there a simple answer to that question?
Unfortunately, no. The dating game and the when it comes to foods, and you're talking about perishables and canned goods and packaged goods, it's a mishmash of rules and regulations. Frankly, except for infant formula and some baby food, product dating really isn't required at all by federal regulations. It's state law, you know, that requires dates on certain things like dairy products, for example, milk and yogurt. But even when you see a date, a store may not have to pull the items off the shelves by that time. So it's really confusing.
In fact, in New York City, sometimes we get milk from New Jersey, and it has a whole different expiration date requirement, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. New York City is a municipality that has taken it upon itself to kind of make even more restrictive regulations regarding when things can be sold by than the state at large. I mean, it's a mishmash.
So let's talk about some of those terms and what they mean. Sell by, best used by, best before, not to be sold after, expires on, and even, isn't there even a born on when we're talking about beer?
Well, that's right. I love that, the born on. It's a new marketing tool the last couple of years.
Yeah, it absolutely is a marketing tool. It's supposed to let buyers choose the freshest beer, you know, and it was a great marketing hook for a while because Anheuser-Busch, who came up with it, was using that as though to imply that other beers aren't as fresh, and, you know, that's your call, but, you know, these things are packaged long in advance, and I think it was a great marketing tool more than anything else.
But all of these things really are pretty much saying the same thing?
No. Not at all. A use-by date or best used-by or quality assurance, that really pertains to the last date the product is likely to be at peak flavor and quality. Again, most of these most of the dates that you'll see don't have to do with safety. They have to do with quality or peak flavor. Now, when you see a use-by or best used-by, for example, it's often placed on foods like cereal, which can, in fact, decline in quality over time, but it doesn't mean the food is not safe to eat after that date. Now, sell or pull by, those are another dates. Those are dates that you often see also on things like milk. And it really is an indication to the retailer of the last date on which a product should be sold, and it takes into account time for food to be stored and used at home. We always recommend that people buy it before that date, but you don't have to use it by then. For example, milk you can use for anywhere between 5 and 7 days after the sell-by date.
And that's one product I would add to your question, Leonard, you started out with, that people really see a difference with milk and who they purchase their milk from, and you can see differences that way. And milk very much is very dependent on the temperature and how well it's kept cold. And I think that's probably the product that consumers notice the most, that they, well, I buy this brand of milk and it's good, or I buy this one, or I get it from a different place. And that's one you can really tell if it's been temperature abused, because it doesn't last as long as those 5 to 6 days you would hope it would after that date.
Well, what is happening, Dr. Sumner, to foods when they begin to spoil? Is this a microbiological matter or a chemical matter?
Well, it really depends on how you want to define it. As Todd was saying, most of these dates for the consumer are totally based on quality. And those are usually going to be some type of odor difference you're going to pick up, or a texture change, or some type of color, which is usually not related to spoilage by microorganisms at all. However, there are times, and milk is one of those because it's not a sterile product, that microorganisms are growing in the product as it's in the refrigerator and doing that piece. And so when you pick up that sour odor in milk, which is more typical of a some of the organisms that grow at cold temperatures, and so you know that it's been kept cold because it's been longer. But if you open up the milk and you pour it out and it's kind of cloddy and it's got some clumps in it, then that's more indicative of the lactic acid bacteria that you might find in your yogurt growing. So that would kind of tell you that they kept the milk too warm. And so you're going to see a difference, and that milk would taste very sour to you instead of the other taste that might taste a little more rancid and have a different smell to it.
Will it make you sick?
No, the organisms in there aren't going to make you sick, but the reality is, and I use my children as a gauge, it doesn't taste good, and they're going to spit it out, and they may want to throw up. And in their definition, yes, that made them sick. So, yes, it's not a pleasant taste. But we're hoping with all of these things from the standpoint of the food industry is that with these dates and things in place, that all this happens and you figure it out as a consumer, and there's not something in it that's going to make you sick.
Although there are also closed dating codes, barcodes and the like, that we're not supposed to understand.
And those you find on products that are very shelf-stable canned goods, and the different products that are out there for longer time, and so their shelf life is much longer and really is not as important for a consumer to understand the dates with those. Those are used really for the manufacturer if they have to do a recall of a product, having that barcode on there. And figuring that out. A lot of times on a canned good, you can probably figure out a code and a date, and that's usually where they tell when it was manufactured. And again, there's some part of that code that's going to tell them which line made that product. So if they ever had to recall that product, they base it on that code.
But don't things age differently? I've been told that the minute you pick a vegetable, it starts going into decline. I would assume that's true of some meats. Right after slaughter, they go into decline. Others seem to age really well. So how do we know when is the optimum time for different things?
Well, I mean, manufacturers tend to be pretty conservative when it comes to labeling. And again, remembering, this is most products, it's voluntary. And they don't want consumers to be consuming products that are, you know, over the top or, you know, less than ideal. So, you know, with a lot of products, you started the show by mentioning, you know, should we go to the back of the dairy section and pick our milk? There's actually a term for that in the industry. It's called, are you a milkmaid? And the milkmaid term means people that actually go in the back and pull out the freshest milk. And that's kind of the way I suggest to people. I said, don't just never buy the items that are stacked in the front of the shelf, because, you know, open date codes, and one of the other things that close codes are used for is in warehouses and on loading docks for warehouse workers to rotate stock. And when they see these codes, and they try to put the older products up toward the front and at eye level, so when you see it, you're most apt to pick it up. But if you go searching through the back, you know, to the back of the shelves, you'll find products that were packaged later or more recently than those at the front. Make you work for it. But the fact of the matter is, you know, a lot of product canned goods, some things are dated a year or two out. Cereal I've seen dated over a year before, the so-called sell-by date appears. Mm-hmm. So I think if there's a decline in quality, especially with packaged goods, it's apt to happen slowly. It's not something you're going to necessarily notice. I always try to, again, I look for the cans or the packages that have the date that's the farthest along down the road.
But even that's not the best indicator, Dr. Sumner. I've been told that if the store lets the milk delivery sit in front before opening time, and there's a lot of sun that's hitting it, then that milk is going to go bad a lot quicker than the stuff that's put in the shade.
That is very correct. We had an actual case that we worked on here with a grocery store. They were trying to figure out why part of the shipment would always spoil faster than the other. And what you just described was happening. The center part stayed very cold. The outside got warmer. And that's, again, where I think consumers, and I'm one of those when I go in, too, I look at how they handle the different products and do they bring the things out and how do they stock the shelf. And I think that's one thing that, again, the grocery store chains have become more in tune to, because every little change in that temperature affects the shelf life of that product. And again, nowhere else do you see it better than with some of the dairy products, that from the time the cow is milked and you keep it cold on the farm till it goes to the processing facility, every little change, 1 or 2 degrees, can shorten the shelf life of that product.
But then meat, for example, is put in meat cases. Some of them seem to have better refrigeration than others. If meat is bright red, is that always a good sign?
That's a very good sign, and that's really, when you look at probably how packaging has changed most recently, it is with our fresh meats. When you go to that meat case, it used to be your butcher in your store was doing those cuts there in the back and wrapping the product. Most of it's coming to the store case ready now. And what that has done for a lot of the ground meats, like the ground hamburger and the ground turkey, when you go to the store now, you notice it's in a different pack. It's in a pillow pack, they call it, the styrofoam container with a nice kind of top on it. And what they want is for the meat to stay a pretty red color. And so they have to maintain the amount of oxygen and nitrogen in that pack. And those packages are packed in about a 50-50 mixture, 50% oxygen and 50% nitrogen, so it stays a pretty red color. If you lower the oxygen, then it's going to start to be purple.
So they've been pumped with gas, in effect.
They have put gases in there, yes, to help them be able to put them in that package and hold them in that package.
Now, supermarket meat labels reveal when the meat was packaged, but since different meats should be eaten at different times, can't be stored as long, what does that all mean? If I buy chicken, it tells me it was packaged today, or beef or veal or pork or fish, do I have to fend for myself in terms of how soon I have to cook it after I've purchased it?
I think as a consumer, a conservative approach is probably within 3 or 4 days of all the different types of meat products. Yes, you can go find a list and they'll tell you exactly how long you can probably keep the products. But if you know you're going to go home and use it within 3 or 4 days, put it in your refrigerator, and that's fine, and you can hold it for that time point. If you're not going to use it in that time point, then you really need to put it in the freezer.
Actually, we are linking two interesting websites to the WNYC Low-Paid Show website with some useful USDA guidelines for interpreting cell dates and handling all types of foods. And it's different for different things. Chicken, I think, probably has the shortest storage time.
Correct.
When we come back, we'll be taking some calls. I also want to find out whether freezing helps in most cases. I know that you can't freeze milk, you can't freeze eggs, but you can freeze bread and you can freeze chicken. What are the reasons for that? And do all things freeze as well? We'll be back right after this with my guests on Please Explain. I'm talking with Dr. Susan Sumner, professor and head of the Department of Food Science and Technology at Virginia Tech, and with Todd Marks, senior editor at Consumer Reports. Stay with us. We're back with this week's Please Explain segment with Todd Marks, a senior editor at Consumer Reports, and Dr. Susan Sumner, professor and head of the Department of Food Science and Technology at Virginia Tech. And we invite your calls at 212-267-WNYC. That's area code 212-267-9692. Before we get to those calls, can we talk a moment about freezing? Does it really suspend time for everything?
Freezing is a wonderful thing, and it does suspend time. I think what we have to realize, though, is kind of like your computer sometimes, garbage in, garbage out, that if we've held something too long in the refrigerator, Yes, we can suspend time when we put it in the freezer, but when we bring it back out of the freezer, it's not going to have that peak quality because it didn't go in the freezer.
Now,
why
do some things freeze well? Meats, fish, and then other things. You can't freeze milk, can you? You can't freeze eggs.
No, because they fall apart. The eggs totally lose their quality characteristics. I mean, we usually use eggs for great baking and different things that they do. And when you freeze that, you totally destroy the protein in that egg, and it's useless anymore, so it doesn't freeze well at all. There are some of the commercial egg products that you can buy, not a whole egg, that are in the little cartons and things like that, that some of those can freeze.
Can't we separate the egg and put the yolks in one container and freeze them and then put the whites in another one? For example, if you have a recipe that calls only for whites and you don't want to throw away those yolks, can you just freeze them for a while?
You know, that's a good question, and I think you probably can. Again, it depends on what type of baker you are and what you're going to use them with, and if you're going to put them in an omelet, if they don't quite have that rising characteristic, if you were going to try to make an angel food cake with it, it might work.
Todd, do you know?
Well, the only thing also is that with certain types of foods, they're apt to pick up the taste of the container. You know, plastic is a wonderful storage medium, but also it can convey and impart a taste of that onto the food. And I would dare say something like eggs and butter, for sure, another one of the most odor-sensitive foods out there, can easily pick up, you know, the taste of anything that it's around, even if it's in the freezer. And when you're talking about, you know, the plastic, butter never quite tastes the same when you take it out of the freezer as when you get it from the dairy case. But one other point I wanted to make about freezing is that freezing is only effective when the temperature of the freezer is at 0 degrees or less. A lot of people don't, you know, we always tell people when we test appliances, for example, that optimally your refrigerator portion should be at 37 degrees to maintain a proper temperature and to keep your food best. And then for the freezer, your freezer should be at zero or lower in order to work the way it's supposed to. And if you know, the best investment we say people should make is go buy a refrigerator and a freezer thermometer to make sure that your appliance is working the way it should to preserve your food the way you want it to.
Let's take some calls. Monica in Manhattan, you're on the Leonard Lopate Show. Hello, Monica.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can.
Yes, all right. First of all, don't ever retire. My mother listens to you. I'm listening to you at work. I have my little transistor in the drawer when nobody's looking. But anyway, my question is, I freeze milk every weekend when I go away. Is that taking some purities or goodness out of the milk when I come back? I just unfreeze it. Good or bad?
And then you put it on your cereal or in your coffee, or how do you use it?
Yes, in my tea and also in my cereal.
Do you notice a difference in the taste?
Well, it's skim milk, so.
Because sometimes ice forms, when you freeze milk and any kind of liquid like that, it can form like ice crystals, and when they thaw, they can again impart a kind of funny taste, or it may taste a little bit more watery.
Or you see a little feathering in your coffee, maybe. You may see some difference in your coffee.
No, I don't drink coffee.
Well, but it's the same sort of thing that happens with ice cream, isn't it? Once it forms those ice crystals, it's never the same.
Right? No. It's never the same, and the ice crystals keep growing because they're growing. And so they're going to grow in there with that, too.
But the goodness is taken out also?
You what?
The goodness is taken out, vitamins and things like that?
No, I haven't. Don't recall any studies specifically looking at that. From the time frame you're talking over the weekend, I don't think you would notice a big difference in any of the nutrients.
Thanks for calling us, Monica. And we go now to Lee in Manhattan. Hi, you're on New York Public Radio.
Hi. Your program is a constant with me, and I love it.
Thank you, Lee.
My purpose in calling is to ask a question which I've asked a number of times concerning chopped meat. And when they put chopped meat in packages, it's all nice and red on the outside. And then you cut through it and you see a circle of black meat in the inside. And the reason they claim this is so is because the air doesn't get to the meat in the inside, which sounds a little preposterous.
But that is very true. That's exactly what is happening with the color pigment in meat. It needs oxygen to stay that very bright red. And so the less oxygen it has, then it starts to get a darker purple color. And that's just the natural color that's in meat.
And if you squeeze it, doesn't that red return, actually, if it's
exposed
to the air?
Well, once you get it out and get it exposed to the oxygen, you're going to see more of the red return to it.
They're not lying to me.
No, they're not lying to you. That's just naturally what's going to happen.
So what's the trick? Is it simply smelling the meat? We do notice if it's gone bad, if it doesn't smell right.
You do. I would say most consumers, if we're talking ground meat now, and this is much more true of hamburger than it is ground turkey, yes, it's going to be that smell that you're going to notice, or that type of texture to it, because typically the organisms that are going to grow on that ground meat will cause that odor to happen.
Let's go to George in Manhattan. Hi, you're on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
It's going well, George.
Great. My question is, as long as we're talking about ground beef, sometimes when I'm making like a meat sauce or hamburgers or something, I've been known to like eat a lump or two of the meat while it's raw before it's cooked. So I was wondering if that's dangerous. I know that steak tartare is very popular in France, but it's also prepared by, you know, experienced chefs. So is there a difference is it dangerous to eat raw meat?
I say it is, yes. It definitely can be your choice as a consumer to do that. If you are a very healthy individual, your risk is much less than if you've have an issue, maybe you're sick or something like that, and the younger you are.
Now, what are the concerns there? If the meat preparers wear those white see-through gloves that they wear nowadays, doesn't that help, or do they have to keep on changing them? If they touch chicken and then they touch ground beef, does one contaminate the other?
Yes, they do, and they definitely have to keep changing their gloves as often as you will with that. The problem with eating the undercooked or the not cooked meat is the fact that there are pathogens and organisms in there that can make you very sick, that are killed when we cook it, that are not going to be killed there in that raw product.
Okay.
Well, I guess I must have a healthy immune system.
You do.
I've been using it for years, and I've never had any.
Well, good for you.
Well, maybe you're going to a very good butcher. Thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Now, that would matter, wouldn't it? If you go to a butcher who grinds the beef in front of you, I'd imagine that it will last longer. Then they put it in waxed paper, which I suspect is better than those pillowed things with the shrink wrap over them.
Yes and no. The meat coming in, I would say as long as you have a very good idea of where they're buying that meat to start with, because the organisms that are on that meat product start from where they purchased it. And the advantage you have buying it from your local butcher is you can see his practices and what he's doing in-house that might influence it as well. I remember one time a small butcher shop when I lived in Lincoln, Nebraska, giving them a hard time because they didn't put the plastic on where they weighed it between chicken and the poultry and between the red meat, and I wanted them to do that and pointed that out, and they're like, oh, yes, that's great. We'll do that more often.
I mean, cross-contamination is always an issue, and, you know, it's why we always recommend you don't use the same cutting board for your vegetables as you would for your chicken.
That's right.
You know, it's a really big thing, and again, cleanliness is such an important part of where you shop and looking at how the food is handled, like we were talking about earlier with the milk. You know, do they allow pallets of milk or other dairy products or meat to rest in the aisles unattended? You know, or is there blood dripping from packaging because it's the packaging has either been there too long or it just wasn't sealed properly? Do the people handling the food, are they, you know, in blood stained aprons or are not wearing gloves? All those are things consumers can size up for themselves in assessing whether they feel it's a good place to do business and that your health isn't at risk.
But Todd, then that puts the onus on us. Aren't there government organizations in charge of food supply safety?
Sure there are, but you know, the last line of defense is yourself. You know, you've got USDA and you've got FDA that have oversight, but usually you have to remember, even when things are inspected, that those agencies often only step in after a problem has occurred. And, you know, I cover product safety here also, and I deal with these agencies all the time. And it's great to have these, you know, agencies there when a recall needs to be enacted, for example, and that's all well and good, but what about you? You want to protect yourself. I'm going to put more trust in myself to be the last line of defense than I am on the government.
Especially in a grocery store, those are fairly regulated by state departments of health or agriculture that go in and regulate those, so it's your state. So they actually are visited probably more often than some of the plants making the food. And I think, Todd, very much use your eyes, not just in the grocery store, but when you go to a restaurant or to a place like that, when you're going, watch what they do. Watch the servers and watch their handling techniques.
In fact, George Orwell wrote a book called Down and Out in Paris and London, in which he said that the safest places to eat in are the ones where they cook in front of you, and sometimes the really fancy restaurants where you can't see what's going on. Some weird things happen, or at least used to during his time.
One of the good things, you can go to the, for example, the New York City Health Department has a list of inspections that you can go to their website and then in turn find out when the last inspection was and whether they were cited, your store was cited for any particular violations.
Elsie in Brooklyn, you're on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Yes, thank you so much. I always find your program so interesting and informative. I was wondering about the refrigerator shelf life of fresh fish. I usually cook it the next day or maybe the day after that, but not, you know, I don't keep it any longer.
That's an excellent practice. Keep it up.
Oh, all right.
It's really a good practice to do.
Thank you so much for calling us.
Thank you very much.
Kathleen in Manhattan. Hi, you're on Leonard Lopate Show.
Yeah, I'm on hold, and I feel like asking about 20 different questions. I froze milk for the first time a couple of weeks ago. It was skim milk, and I didn't notice any ice crystals, but when I drank it a few days later, I had to spit it out. It was all very watery.
Yeah. It often doesn't reintegrate.
Yeah, before I ask my question, could he elaborate just a little bit more what he meant by the bloodstained apron? Is that a bad sign?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that if you're working behind a counter and you're cutting meat, a little bit of a mess is kind of natural. Mm-hmm. But I'm talking about general practices.
Okay.
You know, if it's just, you know, cleanliness is very important, and if it looks dirty rather than just a little spill here and there, they have gowns that they change. They have gloves that they change all the time.
Okay.
You even see it in the deli counter. Handling cold cuts is another kind of dicey thing.
Right.
And I won't shop at a store anymore, for example, with that where the servers or the deli folk don't wear plastic gloves, or then they're using a plastic glove and then they're picking up change other things.
Yes.
Where's the hygiene? So, you know, that's an issue.
But you're saying that if the butcher looks like Sweeney Todd, then
run as fast as you can.
Thank you so much for calling us. Kathleen was also going to ask about how long you should let things cool before you risk spoiling them. I want to go a little further. If you have defrosted something and then you decide you want to put it back in the freezer because you can't use it all, how long do you have to wait? Do you have to let it defrost 100% before you can put it back in the freezer?
The guideline at USDA, if it's a meat product, would tell you that once you take it out of the freezer to start defrosting it, you should finish the cooking process and go ahead and use it. I, as a consumer, have put things back in the freezer that I've put up. I'm not going to be able to use that after a day and put it back in the freezer. What are you doing? You're definitely affecting the quality. And so if you're one of those individuals that can really pick that up, you're going to taste that, and the texture, it might be a little tougher in your meat. Probably after a day or two, you probably need to go ahead and finish defrosting it and cook it and not stick it back in the freezer.
And an interesting just adjunct to that is about how you defrost your foods is important as well.
Right?
You don't want to take your turkey and put it on your counter for a few days or even, you know, a few hours. You really don't want to do that. The same thing, and you want to make sure that you defrost products slowly and in a refrigerated environment.
That's
now,
correct.
This just came in from our crack WNYC news team. A Wisconsin meat processor is recalling 123,000 pounds of ground beef because it may be contaminated. MPAC Foods says the beef may have been contaminated with hydraulic fluid at its Milwaukee plant.
That's We just did a recall about food products being contaminated with glass. I mean, this is part of the machinery.
The hydraulic fluid actually is fairly common.
Yes.
And the only way that MPAC even learned about it was a customer complaint to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service.
Mm-hmm. The odor, probably.
Yeah. The sell dates were January 31st, February 1st, and 2nd. So they're all mostly in other than New York or the local area here. But still, I suspect that thing happens everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is not limited to them. They were. We did a story on product safety this past year, and I wish I could remember the number, but it was something like it may have been 7 million pounds, or it was in the millions of food that was contaminated with E. coli last year, fresh meat products.
Let's go to Andrea in Harlem. Hi, you're on New York Public Radio, Andrea.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for taking my call. I've really enjoyed your program. I wanted to share that if people do freeze their milk, that after they've thawed it, they can just shake it. Of course, you hold on to the top of the carton so it doesn't come out. But that reintegrates the protein in the water. And I've had to start boiling the milk because I'm very sensitive to that dairy bacteria and perhaps some of the other people. And I've just had great results. But I've also found that perhaps using a mixture, I use a hydrogen peroxide and cheap vodka as a disinfectant in my filtered tap water to take the bacteria off of, and I work with grass-fed meat like goat and things like that. But
are you drinking this cheap vodka and hydrogen peroxide?
No, it's a disinfectant. But then, of course, you do a couple more rinses after that, and I'll cook the meat for a couple hours at about 350, and I've had great results.
Does that sound like a good idea?
Some research we've done, we used hydrogen peroxide and vinegar. So I'll have to take that away. You use vodka instead.
But hydrogen peroxide, isn't that dangerous to drink?
She's not drinking it.
She's rinsing it. No, but I know she's putting it on meat. So
it's recommended to use as a disinfectant, the 3% that you buy. Hydrogen peroxide, when you put it on the meat that she's doing, actually dissipates almost immediately. It breaks down into water and oxygen and bubbles up. And I'm sure if she's still alive, I'm sure she's seeing it bubble. When she does that, it immediately breaks down, and you can't measure any hydrogen peroxide left. We used it to wash produce and then rinse the produce. We never used it on ground meats. I know that there have been other individuals that used it on cutting boards that had been used for ground meats.
Now we're pretty much out of time, and we have lots of calls. I'm going to paraphrase a few of them. There's a call about freezing breast milk. There is another person who wants to know about ultra-pasteurized milk and whether you lose something in the process. And a third person wants to know about freezing cheese, raw milk cheeses in particular.
Not recommended to do too much with the raw milk cheeses. They're probably a couple of months to do that, but they can be frozen with that. I'd say 2 or 3 months.
Uh-huh.
Some of the raw milk cheeses.
Freezing breast milk, a lot of women pump it out and then put it in the freezer and then bring it out as is necessary.
Right.
Is that a good procedure?
I think that's a great procedure. I've seen a couple of things recently that really talk about the natural antimicrobials in breast milk, that's really a good thing to do.
And what about ultra-pasteurized milk?
Ultra-pasteurized milk is heated at a really high temperature and usually packaged in much more of a sterile environment. So those products, you'll start seeing that. Some of them actually end up being shelf-stable if they do it the right way. I have like a 45 to 90-day shelf life.
Now, go ahead.
And so they've used just that real high temperature to make them last longer, and they actually can last that long. So a lot of consumers get very confused. Wait a minute, milk usually has like 14 days on it. Now this has 60 days, and it's packaged and processed very differently.
It tastes different to me.
It's going to have a different taste to it. It's a lot better than it used to be.
Well, that's hopeful. Todd, how do our practices in the United States differ from the ones in other countries?
Well,
are we better than many?
We're probably better than many and maybe not as good as some. It's a hard question. It's a very hard question because we don't really follow that much of what's going on internationally. But we do have mechanisms in place in this country that are pretty strong. The system doesn't always work. And, again, with a patchwork of regulations regarding labeling, especially the fact that all but virtually every product out there, it's voluntary, and each label that you read is apt to be different, makes it hard for the consumer to interpret and understand what's what.
And a lot of times we tend to, in the European countries, they tend to shop more often and don't keep things as long as we do, and we tend to have a pantry and keep things in the freezer where they may be going every other day to the grocery store and using what they buy.
So it would be impossible to come up with universal standards.
Well, I think we could probably do a little bit better here when it comes to labeling, because, again, there should be no reason why a consumer has to decipher whether a used by, a best by, a quality assurance, a sell by, a pull date, a package date, or an expiration date, or a born on date, can mean totally different things.
And just one more thing. Do we need to put expiration dates on bottled water?
You know, to me, an expiration date means that it's expired. Don't touch this product after that date. I could see more of a sell-by date on bottled water than an actual expiration, because very few products have actual expiration dates.
I think it's just about eggs is one of the few, and the law stipulates that if you buy federally graded eggs before the expiration date, and those dates must be no more than 30 days from when they were put in the carton, you could still use them for the next three to five weeks,
right.
Well, thank you both so much for being with
you.
Us. We know when eggs are bad, don't we? They smell bad. We've been talking to Todd Marks, Senior Editor at Consumer Reports, and Dr. Susan Sumner, Professor and Head of the Department of Food Science and Technology at Virginia Tech. It's been really interesting. Thank you for participating in this week's Please Explain.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Todd and Leonard. It was
wonderful.
Thank
you, Doctor.